welcome to a new episode of Design Cafe, a podcast where we have mindful, candid conversations for designers in tech. This season, we're going to cover a lot of difficult but important topics like the challenges of career growth, toxicity at work, mental health, and diversity, equity, and inclusion. These are topics that maybe don't get talked about as often as we like, but they no less impact us all as designers. I'm your co-host, Susan.
And I'm your co-host, Sandrine.
If you like our podcast, please follow and rate us on your podcast platform. You can follow us on Twitter, where we are at Design Cafe, and LinkedIn, where we are Design Cafe. Our website is designcafe.com, which includes a link to our Buy Me a Coffee page as well, in case you want to buy us a coffee to help support our podcast. This week, we are going to talk about toxic goal setting and the pressure some of us designers and other people who work in tech, really, the pressure we sometimes feel to always grow and set ourselves goals and always be productive in our careers. So hopefully we'll have some interesting conversation around that today. Perhaps a good place to start, Sandrine, is could you elaborate maybe on what we mean by toxic goal setting and growth at all costs?
Okay, so for me, I guess things tend to become a bit toxic when, I don't know if toxic is the right word, but I feel like sometimes there's a lot of pressure to constantly, yeah, set ourselves goals, whether it's for our personal development, whether it's for things that we want to achieve for the year. And don't get me wrong, goals are important to align a team. So I'm not really talking about team goals here, because I do think that your team should have goals. And if your team does not have any, then there's definitely a problem there. I'm more talking in terms of goals applied to an individual. And I think sometimes there's a lot of pile up that can happen between your company goals, your team goals, your department goals. And then on top of that, you add the individual goals. And at the end of the day, you actually become really burdened with a whole pile of goals to achieve, and sometimes quite limited time, obviously, to achieve them all. And I find that often for me, my growth happens through what I achieve with my team. So I personally find goal setting in terms of personal development sometimes quite difficult to define, because I find that the growth really happens as I'm doing things. I'm someone who just likes to learn by doing. So I find that often those goal settings is very abstract. Like, for example, you would have something about, okay, I want to improve my stakeholder management skills. Okay, so concretely, I could achieve a lot of that through my team, you know, daily activities, and maybe I can try to push myself a bit on some aspects and define new opportunities with my manager, but it will still be related to my team work. I find it sometimes a little bit hard when I don't know if you know what I mean. It's like when you cut it out like that, out of context almost sometimes. Yeah, I guess for me, it's more like sometimes it's just that expectations, when maybe the individual is actually just happy to just double down on what they're doing with their team or with their function. And they don't particularly have a goal that they envision for themselves that year. And I find that sometimes we just push it on people. And sometimes it's not meaningful to them. And for me, it's really where that starts becoming, again, I don't know if toxic is the right word, but that's when it starts becoming too much. It's like when it loses its meaning and it feels like it's something you have to do and it doesn't really bring you much. So yeah, I don't know how you would define, that's really for the goal setting part. Productivity is a little bit different, but how would you define it?
I very much agree. For a very long time, I've felt very uneasy when I've been, well, I'm not a permanent, I'm self-employed now, so I don't have this, I don't have this goal setting problem anymore, thank goodness. But while I was permanent, I always felt a bit uncomfortable with very rigid individual goal setting structures and frameworks. Usually they would be tied to some sort of also very rigid and structured progression framework. And like you say, it's I always felt way more growth and value and impact from focusing on my squad goals, because we're working as part of a team, we're collaborating, and we're trying to move in the same direction, and we're trying to focus, which is, in my opinion, what you should do as a designer. Like, you don't work alone. And then on top of that, having individual goals would sometimes feel a bit performative in one way, like you had to reach these goals in order to check off the boxes in order to get that promotion, which someone had designed into this very rigid career framework. And if you care about being promoted or moving up or challenging yourself, you have no other choice but to set these goals, individual goals, aside from your team goals, and work on those as well. And I'm of the very strong opinion that juggling these multiple things, these multiple priorities, so you have priorities in the team, and you have these priorities of, sometimes people have personal OKRs, so they have their squad's OKRs, and then there are the company OKRs, and then they have their personal OKRs, which I suppose they sometimes work, maybe if you set them sort of for yourself just to help you focus, but if they're part of this rigid structure that you have to do, that's a lot of OKRs, so that's a lot of goals. And the whole point of having goals in the first place is to have focus and direction, and if you have multiple goals on multiple levels, to me it often becomes a distraction, and like I said, a bit performative. So like, for example, if you look at your week, if you work full-time, you have 5 days, and that's the wrong word, but I tend to like to work in cross-functional empowered teams, where my home is the team, the cross-functional team, not the design department or the product department. I want the focus for my week, for those 5 days, to be that team's goals. And if I, on top of everything, also have to, you know, do a presentation or work on my stakeholder management skills or anything like that, then how do I allocate my time? Do I constantly have to context switch? That's not good. That's not healthy. So yeah, is toxic the right word? I think it becomes toxic when it's not genuine, and when you don't feel like you're genuinely growing, when you feel like it's something you have to do in order to check the boxes and get the promotion. And I think there are other ways of promoting people, like, for example, having a very holistic, more qualitative evaluation of how a designer has grown over time to their strengths. And, you know, there are also other career progression structures, which just promotes people based on how many years they've worked. And, you know, so there are different ways of doing it.
Yeah, a lot of the things you say completely resonated with me. First of all, actually, I think, I don't know how you find, but I find that those goals sometimes are, they claim to be about your growth and your opening opportunities for you in the future and working towards the high level promotion. I actually often find them very disconnected. I don't know for you, but for me, I've had sometimes some goals where it would say, as a key result, read 6 books about leadership. Cool. All right. What does that mean? Like, because it's so hard to quantify progress on growth goals like that. For me, in my ability to show that I've improved my stakeholder management skills, for example, if that's my goal, yes, I can start obviously reading books about, you know, working with leadership or communication skills and that sort of thing. And that's great. It's obviously helpful to do these things. But at the end of the day, just tracking how many books I've read, and I'm not even kidding, I've had those goals being put, like, you know, black on white. And that was my key result. And I was looking at it, I was like, well, first of all, how do I find the time to read 6 books? I may not have the time, as you said, it's context switching. I also have my personal goals. I love reading fiction and things for myself. And I, for example, just really struggle to focus on workbooks. So there's that I have to manage. It adds pressure. I have to find the time for it. Second of all, okay, I've read 6 books. If I've managed to read them, what was the takeaway from them? Did I really actually apply what I've read? And beyond that, actually, I found that with my managers, if I could tick that box, it resulted in nothing. Beyond maybe us having a great conversation about my learnings, maybe I could share some with the team. Okay, that's good. but it didn't feel like genuine growth, as you said, because at the end of the day, yeah, I had ticked that box, but maybe I had not demonstrated more stakeholder management skills. So actually, my manager could not effectively say that I had reached that level, for example, for promotion and that sort of thing. So I just find them really all disconnected, and it puts that... I think behind it, there's like the willingness of the company to create space for people to dedicate time to those things. So I think it comes from a good place. But I think often it ends up competing with other priorities, and it adds pressure of like yet another thing to do. Whilst I agree that I think you can get tremendous growth that feels really genuine and meaningful over time with your team. And I think I prefer myself as well doubling down on those things, because I actually have concrete examples to show of being like, last year, these kind of problems, I will have tackled it in that way. This year, I've tackled it this way because I have more experience. I have, I don't know, a better approach to it. And you can actually, you know, show how you've gone up a level in that way with actual results, or through the impact that you've had on the product through success metrics and that sort of thing. And I find these things much better indicator of like what kind of designer you are and your success and your impact and over time your growth as well.
Another thing that strikes me is that there's always the assumption that you want to grow in the form of having a promotion. Or like if you're a mid-white designer, there's the assumption that, of course, everyone wants to become the senior designer and the lead designer and the principal or whatever structure it is. You always want the promotion. Or there's often also the assumption that if you're a senior designer, for example, that you want to go into design management because that's how you level up. But my issue with that is that that's not necessarily the way towards growth for absolutely everyone. But my issue with that is that being promoted or leveling up in terms of your title isn't necessarily the only way or the one way to grow in your career as a designer. Do you have thoughts on that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think this is probably a big bias we have in our society in general, that we always have to show more, get more all the time. And often in our career, that means getting more through, more responsibility, higher level, progression up the ladder and all of that. For me, I think we should start valuing other kinds of growth. As you said, there's your growth as a human being, and you might want to focus on that. Like you might have great growth from your, I don't know, from an emotional intelligence perspective, for example, or from a communication perspective, or on the personal side, you might actually develop a hobby and become really great at it. And all of these are growth. So you're growing as an individual. And for someone to tell you that you're not growing because you've not maybe shown some aspects of it in your work setting, I think can be actually very frustrating and quite disheartening, actually, because, I mean, I just don't think that they're true when basically people say that if you know that you've grown in many other areas of your life. Sometimes I'm wondering, why is there so much pressure to grow at work constantly? Like, maybe, as you said before, maybe you want to focus on other areas. And I think it should be allowed, and it should not be... Yeah, I just don't think you should be constantly pushed for it.
Yeah, I've been reflecting on this a lot in the last few years, because I think for most of my 20s, I bought into this career hustle culture, and because that's what society and everyone around me told me, that for me to move forward, the only way to move forward was to get promotions and get the fancier title, so I can tell people that, you know how some people always introduce themselves by saying their title, and I just find that a bit interesting.
It's like, is that who you are?
It's like, hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm the principal designer. Hi, I'm so-and-so, I'm a head of design. And they always have to shove their titles down your throat. Sorry, I feel mean. Anyway. And then I think maybe it's an age thing. Maybe it's spending a decade of doing this thing. But I hit my 30s and I noticed that I found so much more growth when I stopped chasing those career promotions and titles. So like, I'm self-employed now, which I love, because I'm growing in totally different ways. And even before I became self-employed, I noticed that I had a shift away from wanting to move up the ladder and more towards, I want to have hobbies. I want to have other things that define me apart from work. I don't want me being a designer to define me as an identity. I am more than a designer, and I want to be a holistic human. This is getting really woo-woo. but I want to have hobbies. I want to learn Italian. I want to continue going to the gym and getting stronger. I want to travel. I want to eat good food. You know, it's like there are more things to me than being a career woman or a career designer. And it was when around the time I started approaching or hitting my 30s that I let go of the notion that my next thing to do in my career is to level up in terms of promotions. And my biggest growth has been in the last few years of just growing as a human rather than growing as a designer. And now that I'm self-employed as well, I'm learning so much about just like running my own business, managing my time, handling clients, you know, those sort of things that, yes, I am missing out on the hustle and grind of being full-time permanent in a company and belonging to that career framework structure. But I'm growing in so many other ways.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, even being a perm, I've yet to come across a designer who has been feeling fulfilled by the career framework that their company had to provide for them. So, I mean, I'm hoping they exist somewhere. But yeah, I completely hear you. Maybe it has to do with age. I'm not sure, but I agree that for me now, it's more about actually learning to be content as well. Has been actually a huge growth for me to some extent, because it's also about kind of removing that anxiety of always needing more, and you know, learning to accept problems and focusing more around embracing them and figuring out solutions as opposed to giving up sometimes too fast, like on a company, and move somewhere else where I guess I could get a bigger growth boost in terms of career ladder per se. And yeah, I guess just learning to be content with some things, maybe being slower on some aspects as well, and go deeper as a result as well, I think has been quite nice. But I don't know if that makes any sense, what I'm saying.
I love what you're saying about going slower, or even both going slower and being content, as well as almost not taking a step back, but just taking breaks and not growing and not being productive, like taking time out to not grow and not be productive. I think it's also very important. I was thinking about how I've observed, there are many types of companies, but I've observed companies that idolizes constant productivity and constant hustle, and then I've observed companies that don't idolize that, and instead I idolize rest and recovery and taking time out, and companies and designers, individual designers as well, that think of themselves, whether you're a company or an individual designer, you think of yourself as going through seasons. Like no one spends a whole year hustling for 12 months. Life has seasons, your designer career has seasons, and your company trajectory and environment has seasons, and there will be periods where you're busier and other periods where if you can, you should slow down. So for the first category of companies that I feel like are idolizing hustle culture and productivity, you notice things like, for example, if someone was doing work over the weekend, that person gets a shout out at the company all hands, like, oh, thank, well done for this person who managed to work 3 hours on a Sunday evening to rescue this thing, blah blah blah. Or individual people who pride themselves on, oh, I worked 13 hours today. You know, that's those sort of things get applauded and brought out and succeeded, whereas the types of things in these sort of companies that don't get idolized and valued those, like, no one applauds people for taking time out, taking an afternoon off because they're tired, or taking a day off, or just finishing early because they want to clear their head. And then on the flip side, I've observed companies that, yeah, like I said, idolizes mindfulness and respects humans and human seasonality and respect rest. And what those type of companies applaud and value and celebrate as success is when people take long holidays, or when people say, I'm going to log off Slack 3 hours early because I'm just going to go for a walk with my dog and then I'm going to do nothing this afternoon. Those companies are really rare, but I've seen them, and they have such a stronger culture and better performance and kinder people than the ones that just idolizes like this grind and hustle. I am very, very biased, and I'm making very generalized statements. What I'm trying to say is that I felt so much happier and more successful in the second type of company, where we weren't expected to be these drones who came in and clocked in at 9 and clocked out at 5:30 or whatever. And oh, if you clock out at 5:15, then people make these, you know, little comments about, oh, aren't you finishing early? Or if you book holiday, then someone makes these little jokes about, oh, who approved that holiday? And it's like, so you feel guilty for finishing earlier if you feel guilty for taking a holiday. I find that quite toxic.
Yes, I mean, it is extremely toxic. We all need rest. It's not saying that we just deserve, it's also needed. I mean, there's no secret that the reasons why there's so many burnouts in society these days is because the hustle culture in some companies is real. I think it's also important for each and every one of us to learn to say no, and also learn where your boundaries are. I think sometimes some individuals will want to push more because they're just super passionate about something and they want to see it through. And, you know, they're in a period of like, yeah, I'm going for this period. And, you know, it's fine. Like sometimes that's actually very self-sustaining because we're in a moment of flow and, you know, it's great. But then there's also maybe other moments in your life where you'll be like, yeah, you know what? I'm done. I'm tired. I need a break. And that should also be respected. And I think we're going to oscillate between the two throughout our career. And it's perfectly normal. And both states should be rewarded in their own ways. And I think you can't have one without the other. I don't think you can have a very good flow state without a good rest state as well. Or at least over time, your flow state is going to really, really suffer. And it's going to become non-existent because there's only so far you can take your body as well. Yeah, and I also think that if you are in a constant hustle, you also never really get to enjoy the rewards of your success. Like I find that you have no headspace for enjoying how far you've come. Actually, you even may not realize how far you've come because you never have that. You never have that space to reflect and take a step back. And I think you miss out a lot there in terms of self-reflection and also just asking yourself real questions sometimes to reset yourself and being like, okay, I've achieved this. Yay me. But also now what's next? You know, do I want to keep doubling down on this? Do I want to change? And I think when you're in a constant productivity and hustle, sometimes I think I've seen some people sometimes going really far down into a place and then only to realize at the end actually it's not really where they want to be. And sometimes it can be quite a tough realization as well. So that's why just making sure you take time along the way is super important.
Yeah, that completely resonates with me. Last year for me was one of those years where I worked the least, but it was also my most successful year. Without going into so too much detail, but like you describe it, it came after a period of not, I wouldn't say I hustled. I haven't hustled that much in the last few years, but last year came after a period of kind of finishing full-time work, and I got this vast expanse of months and months of having a very chill life, and that downtime really helped me. You know how if you exercise, the way you grow in terms of physical fitness, like whether you're running or lifting weights or whatever, you grow when you rest. You're not growing while you're exercising. The exercise, the actual exercise is there to stimulate your endurance or your muscle or whatever, but the actual I'm extrapolating strength training to running. I don't know anything about running. I'm assuming it works in the same way. But anyway, the way you grow physically is when you rest. And so my last year was one of those years for me where I just did very little but grew immensely because I had that time of not hustling and not being super productive and not being focused on growth to actually like stew and actually grow. So there's something to it. And not everyone, of course, has the luxury and privilege to take it that slow. And I appreciate that. But perhaps maybe instead of months and months, find these little pockets of downtime to have these little mini recovery and mini rests throughout your work life.
Yeah, that really resonates with me. Maybe this is why we're seeing the big resignation happening after COVID, where people had to slow down, they had to stop, and so much reflection, I guess, came from it to some extent. So yeah, I find it really interesting actually to reflect whether growth happens when you actually finally give yourself a break. It's really interesting. Susan, I was wondering, so it sounds like you've had some experience of working in a hustle and bustle culture. Do you have any tips or I guess advice to work around and maybe set boundaries when that happens in the workplace?
It's very difficult. I my way of setting boundaries is to leave the job, which is not necessarily my recommendation. I mean, no, that's I'm joking mostly. I haven't been leaving jobs because I needed to set boundaries. I think my point is I haven't been full time in any place long enough to really be qualified to talk to that extent about, you know, these long term hustle. But when you talk about short term hustle, what springs to mind is pointing to priorities. So let's say I have a pile of priorities in my team, and then someone, a manager or someone else, gives me additional priorities in my department. So in addition to my team, my cross-functional work, I have to meet OKRs. I also have to do additional work in my department to grow the department, make it more visible in a design community, etc., etc. And then on top of that, I also have these individual performance goals. What I like to do is, I don't enjoy doing this, but what I've tended to do is to confront whoever's like putting these demands on me, confront them with what they think the priorities are. So like, for example, say, here are my 10 priorities right now. That's an oxymoron. I can't have 10 priorities. Like one of these need to be the priority. If you would like me to focus on priority number 5 and want me to move it up to position number 1 in my list, then I can do that. But then these other things need to go down the list. Like it's physics. Is it physics? I don't know. Like I can only prioritize one thing at a time. So if you're all asking me to do different things, then you need to be comfortable with the fact that if I prioritize this thing, then I'm not going to prioritize these other things. Because I wonder if sometimes the expectation, maybe sometimes the people demanding this productivity from you aren't aware of everything you've got on your plate. And perhaps for myself, I reached a point where I realized I was too much of a yes person. I would just say yes to everything because I thought that that's what I needed to do. And also I'm a bit of a people pleaser. I thought that was what I needed to do in order to do my job. But then I realized I can't do my job properly if I'm juggling way too many things. And also I need to help these other people understand that what they're asking from me isn't the only thing that it has been asked from me. So yeah, just to summarize that, show people, be transparent about your list of quote unquote priorities and check with them if they're comfortable with with deprioritizing other things in order to prioritize that one thing. But apart from that, I would say leave. Just joking.
Half joking. I think your suggestion is actually quite nice, because it's I feel like it's a productive way of saying no. Like, it's not actually saying I won't do any of this. It's about saying I will do this, but here are the implications of me focusing on this. And I think that's a very productive way, actually, of having that conversation, because you're saying no, but you're also saying yes at the same time. So you're kind of showing that you're willing to accommodate that third party, but it has to come, obviously, at the cost of something else. So I think that can be actually quite helpful to have that kind of that kind of conversation, as opposed to just being like, no, I really can't do this. Like, that usually, that kind of conversation does not go down very well, and they're also very, very hard to just say. I find that what's helpful as well is especially when overtime, like, sometimes doing a bit of overtime is fine. Like, I'm happy to do it. Sometimes I'm super focused on something and I'm happy to push a few more hours and it's totally okay. But when it starts to become like something, you know, recurring, and you start having colleagues putting really late meetings, or I don't know, just over expectations, I think that's when, you know, starting to learn to say no is important, and then maybe actually start putting more of a boundary set around actually just explain that you also have personal things going on as well, in the sense of like, well, you know, this is when family time starts for me, or like, that's when I like to end my day. And for example, you know, can say, I like to start my day early, and, you know, I actually don't work past 6 p.m. because I start really early, or like, kind of just put some boundaries of like when your day stops. And I find out what's helpful usually is to act like it's actually not a big deal, like it's actually a normal thing to do, so that it helps normalizing the fact that overtime is not really like something that should be taken for granted, and that it's normal to at some point stop the work and go and focus on something else for yourself. And acting like it's a normal thing to do, actually, I find sometimes really helps, because I think sometimes we can have a lot of kind of influence just through the way we react to things. And if we do it and we act like it's a normal thing to do, then maybe other members as well might be like, oh yeah, that's actually okay to do, and to stop to go to dinner now. And I don't know, it kind of normalizes the behavior, and it maybe stops normalizing the other behavior that is actually quite toxic. So sometimes it can help reverse the trend as well in that way.
Yeah, this is a bit tangential to what you're saying, but it makes me think of calendar management and how I tend to approach lunch breaks. Because in many places I've observed that the company or the team or whatever will be of the attitude that, oh yeah, we try not to schedule meetings over lunch breaks because people should have their lunch, but then that's the only slot that they can find a meeting time. And I'm like, of course that's the only slot that you can find a meeting time, because that's when people get their lunch break, which they're entitled to in their contract. So, but meeting setters ignore that and set the meetings then. Anyway, one of my little hacks has been to use the out of office auto decline function in Google Calendar to set a recurring event for my lunch break that automatically declines any meeting that comes in on my lunch break. Because also that saves me the effort of saying, oh, I can't make this meeting time because blah, blah, blah. Could you move it? And it sets the default. My default behavior is to take lunch. I'll take my lunch break at lunchtime because it's lunchtime and I'm supposed to have a break. And so the onus is on the meeting inviter to figure out, to navigate this. So I think there's something to it around setting boundaries by establishing your defaults. And if someone tries to interfere with your defaults, whether that's, you know, finishing at 5 or 5:30, or maybe, you know, you start early, or, you know, whatever your boundaries are, the onus is on the person trying to disrupt your defaults to justify why they should steal your time, basically. Because I feel like a lot of the time it's the opposite. You're having to negotiate your boundaries and negotiate your defaults all the time to accommodate all these other demands of people trying to steal your time. And if you can flip that by enforcing your defaults and making the other party justify why they should steal. I use steal your time quite deliberately, because that's how I sometimes feel like it is when people eat into time away from work that I have established for myself. It feels like theft. I feel mean this episode. I'm in a mean mood today. But yeah, that resonates.
Yeah, I mean, time theft is a real thing. You know, time is our most precious like resource that we have. We all have the same amount of time in a day, and how we allocate it is really important. I've actually seen on LinkedIn today, I think the CEO from ADP List was saying, if you can find 8 hours a day for your employer, sure you can find 2 hours for yourself as well. And it kind of resonated with me of being like, it's all about you also setting those boundaries and prioritizing that. And those 2 hours could be saying productive, it could be also just rest. It doesn't matter. It's just, it has to be for yourself. And that's really important. So yeah, going back to goals, actually, I was wondering, do you think there's a way we could make like goals, like growth goals, a bit more helpful, or at least, I don't know, a bit more helpful and relevant for people to actually achieve growth?
I think I'm speaking to that from a very, hello, I'm Susan, I've been through therapy and I've done lots of mindfulness. I think I approach it from that angle. I think a helpful way to set meaningful growth goals is to allow the individual designer, first and foremost, time to reflect on themselves properly, like deeply, I find it quite shallow or superficial or surface scratching when designers are asked to reflect on themselves by looking at a chart of their designer skills and like indicating, oh, I'm a 5 in user research, I'm a 2 in visual design, I'm a whatever, like score themselves. I think it's more meaningful and helpful to start much deeper than that and reflect deeply on who you are as a person, as a designer, which part of you bring to work, what values you have in life, and how those life values reflect themselves into what values you bring as a designer. Because that will lead to a more meaningful set of principles to set for yourself as a designer. And oh god, I just dropped into my head of thinking of, think of the designer as a product. What's the vision, mission? but not that far, but taking the time and energy to reflect on yourself and come out with some sort of principles for yourself, like who am I who am I as a designer. So I can use myself as an example. I've spent a lot of time the last few years just reflecting on my cultural identity and where I'm from and how all my different cultural backgrounds influence what I'm like as a person. And that's my reflection of myself as an individual, coupled with everything that's gone on in the world with racism and misogyny and trans rights and, you know, all of those things, have helped me really kind of flesh out a bit of who I am as a person and what kind of values and principles I have. And I realized one of my strong principles is of inclusivity and creating a more inclusive world, a more equitable world. That's me as a person. That's me reflecting on me as a human, not me as a designer. But then I take those principles and bring them into my work as a designer, and it manifests in things like that I focus a lot on growing in accessibility, growing in inclusive design, but also growing in things like content design and writing accessible and inclusive content. So those sort of things. So I don't know if this, I don't know if this makes sense to other people, but for me, it's really helped me grow as a designer in a meaningful way, to take a total step back away from the design profession and reflect on myself as a human and realize what my values and principles are. And I don't think, this is a bit related to what we talked about in the last episode, I don't think many managers are equipped with that psychological knowledge to develop their the people they manage in that way. Like most people, managers aren't trained mindfulness coaches or psychotherapists or psychologists. Most of them probably have, yeah, like we say, we have had this chart or this framework of a progression thing and some boxes I'm exaggerating, but most of these growth setting practices don't go so deep as to who the designer is as a human, I don't think.
Yeah, no, I agree. And when you think about it as well, sometimes when there's such a deep exercise, it's like, does it has to be done through your manager as well? Like, can it be something that you commit to do for yourself? And, you know, at the end of the day, do they need to know what my goals are if at least myself I am clear on it and I'm set to work towards them? Like, half of my goals in life, they're not goals that I've shared with anyone, but I've still taken the time to work towards them. And like, I don't know, it's sometimes I'm wondering, because sometimes the manager-employee relationship can be, I mean, sometimes it's a very caring one, and that's great when that happens, because meaningful work and talks can happen. But sometimes it's not the deepest bond. So is this really the best place to have those kind of reflective conversations? Which, I mean, you have to be vulnerable and you have to be comfortable looking within. And if you're not comfortable with your manager, you're definitely not best place to have those conversations. And the output of the session will probably not be very productive. And as you said, if the goals don't go deep enough, then it's not helpful. I've found that as well sometimes. I really like what you said around realigning with your core values and principles and kind of figuring out, what am I about as a human being, and then how can I expand through my practice at work? And I find that it's also a way to identify your strengths, or at least your angle, and what it is that is different about you that you can bring as well to your workplace. And I find I reflect on that is quite helpful, because sometimes with growth goals, we actually try to tick every single box of being like, you know, as a designer, I need to be amazing across the whole design process spectrum. So like, you know, I'm not really good at UI, so I need to like figure out how upscale there, whilst maybe actually your areas of interest and strength are on the complete opposite side. And I think it's also okay to value individuals that are different and who want to grow in different ways. I mean, thankfully, there's loads of companies who do value that. So, you know, but yeah, I think having that deeper reflection can also push people to do that even more.
Yeah, I think you make a great point about how maybe the manager relationship isn't necessarily always the right place to do those deep reflections. And thinking about it, it makes total sense in a context of how I've grown. I found so much more growth and meaningful growth through just knowing that for myself I grew, and knowing that I grew as a human but also as a designer. And for very many of these quote-unquote growth goals or these growth outcomes I've had, no one at work probably realized that I'd grown in those different areas where I was realigning with my values and my principles, and no one rewarded me for it. I didn't get a promotion for being more aware of non-inclusive design or things like that. And growth, this is a bit meta, but growth for me was also just being very comfortable with the fact that maybe I will not get that external validation from a manager or a company of my growth progress and my growth outcomes. But I value it. And so it's internal validation. And that is so much more meaningful, that I feel like I am growing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like an inner fire. It's really important, though. It's the probably the most powerful one, but it takes time to build it. Like confidence often gets in the way, and I don't think the way culturally, I don't think we are set for being very good at internal validation, unfortunately.
Thinking back on toxic productivity, or yeah, productivity at all costs, I sometimes slash often feel like we live in a society, and many companies as well work on this, where they idolize busyness. So if you say you're busy, then that's a good thing. You like people wear their busyness as a badge. If you're in stand-up and you can say that you're working on 10 different things and you're so busy, then that's, you kind of feel, you know, you feel a sense of smugness out of saying that you're so busy. Or yeah, just idolizing busyness. How do you navigate that? And are there ways we can shift a bit to idolize the opposite of busyness?
All right, well, there's this saying of like, work smarter, not harder, right? So for me already, that's kind of a good reminder sometimes to bring to people that busyness does not equal efficiency and effectiveness. Actually, we did have a podcast episode about this last season. Going quite deep into that topic. So I think there's that of like reminding people of that, and sometimes more junior people will make that mistake of trying to do everything and going very shallow level, or taking on way too many different responsibilities and ending up delivering poor quality because they're prioritizing on quantity. So there's that. I actually had a really nice experience on that in my current job, where it got called out. So we have these weekly meetings with our design team, and it actually ended up being a display of how much and how busy you were. And someone actually in the team just called it out and say, it sounds like we're just trying to show how busy we've been, or how much we've been doing, as opposed to just going over one or two opportunities we've been on that we need to collaborate with someone else in the team, or that we need to make sure the team is aware of. And that was really refreshing of having someone pointing that out, and everyone actually was really receptive to it. And it was almost like someone was calling it out, and it was removing that pressure of having to show always constantly more. And that it was acceptable to say that one week, you know what, now it's acceptable to say, yeah, this week I've been focusing on user interviews, and, you know, just talk about your research goals maybe, and that was it. And you will only cover one thing. And as a result, as a team, we've agreed actually now that you show one project, and now you show something cool as well, which is inspiration based. And that was really nice actually, because now people prioritize what they talk about. So they really pick something that is really the biggest priority in the week. And it just, yeah, once again, it removes that pressure of like, oh my God, I have to show how busy I've been this week, which sometimes these meetings can feel like that if there's no really good settings around it. So maybe bring it up as a team conversation. It came up for us in a retrospective where someone mentioned it and just called it right out. And yeah, in the end, we were able to address the problem.
I love that. That makes me think of what I mentioned earlier of the bucket of companies that reward doing less, having focus, and prioritizing in many ways. I'm always way more impressed when people say I'm doing this one thing this week, than people who say I'm doing these 20 things this week. Or I'm more impressed when people say I'm finishing early because I finished my one task earlier, so I'm going to go home now, rather than people who say, oh, I worked really late hustling on this thing. And I think I'm more impressed by that, because it tells me that these people know how to value their time and manage their time, and they know how to focus, and they know what are the most important things right now, and also that they value rest and they understand that overworking makes you more sick, and if you're more sick, then you're less productive, and it can sometimes lead to burnout or other issues. And it's just, you know, in the long run, you need to bake in rest and finishing early and doing less and having time off.
Maybe some last thoughts, because I don't want to give the wrong impression to people that Susan and I are preaching not being productive at all, and I guess not being proactive at work. And I think it's quite important to make the difference there. I think when we tend to constantly work harder without breaks and really go into the productivity rabbit hole, it's actually very easy to become just reactive at work. And it's always about do more, do more, do more, as opposed to actually taking a step back and reevaluate and being like, okay, hold on, we got this far, then here's what we should do next. And I think sometimes you can be even more efficient and even more productive because you've taken that moment of pause.
Okay, we had a really nice chat / ventilation session, a bit of ventilation from my side anyway, on toxic goal setting, growth at all costs, and productivity at all costs. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Please follow and subscribe to our podcast on whatever podcast platform you use if you want to follow us for more. We are on Twitter at Design Cafe, and our website is designcafe.com. We'll see you for another episode in 2 weeks. Thank you.